Oh, he cries a lot, y'all. He does. My name's Taylor. I'm a recovered alcoholic and drug addict. Hey, guys. That is almost all the way true, except he did not fly me here. He sent me a flight itinerary, and the next morning I sent him a receipt and said, I'll see you in 2.5 weeks. And that's exactly what I did. That's probably the most drive that I've had as an adult. To really do anything was just to kind of get out of my comfort zone for a little bit. But as a kid, I was really driven. I was raised on a farm in Southeast Louisiana. You fall off the horse, you get back on. We don't fail, we hold our own. You know, that's just kind of how it was. And I was raised by people that definitely had that same backbone. I've probably told this story a million times that, you know, I was not loved as a child and my parents hated me and my brother and sister were the favored ones. Looking back on it, that's definitely not the case, you know. My mom was a single mom for a little bit. She met my dad. They got married. He adopted me right away. Got a whole new last name. Got a whole new family that I didn't have on one side. And they loved me very much and they accepted me for everything that I was. But I just didn't feel that way. I did not feel that way. Never did I feel that way. I felt kind of like I stuck out a little bit. I was a super smart kid. I never had anything less than A's. If they were below a 98%, I was crying. That was just it. Perfection was my strife. If everything's perfect, there can't be anything wrong. Even though everything is really wrong. I hate me and I don't like me and I don't accept me, but I don't really know me either. And that's kind of the paradox that I lived in for a really long time. I was in the bathtub this morning thinking about how as a kid I was just, you know, the book talks about being driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And I was a driven kid. If I wanted to do it, I set my mind to it and you do it. The sky's the limit, Heather. You have the world by the cojones. Can I say that? I'll try not to curse though. That's that's just the life that I lived, you know? Whatever you want, you can do it. You can do it. You just put your mind to it. I had a strong mind, you know, so I could do anything. Being that driven, when I was 8, so I was on the news when I first moved here to do snow removal, and there's this little news clip that talks about this girl's a long way from the bayou, and there's I'm salting sidewalks out in Port Washington, and it's cold, and I'm by myself, and my Louisiana gear. I showed up here in my 1999 Toyota RAV4, 4.5 days after I flew back home with 2 laundry baskets, a TV, and a mirror. I had $10 in my pocket, and I had $31 in change because I was a car hop at Sonic. That was what I came to Wisconsin with, and I got here December 2nd. That was it. As a kid, though, I was in the newspaper one time, and I was 8 years old. And the article says something about, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it says, I either want to be a maid or a lawyer, but I don't like to clean, and I like to argue a lot, so I'm probably just going to be a lawyer. And that was me. I was an argumentative little twat. That was just me. I was terrible. I would argue you anything because I was always right. I'm the girl that can do anything. I'm smart enough. My family is going to support me. If I want to do it, I can do it. And I did. I did just about anything that I wanted to do. If I wanted to play softball, I played softball. I was dead set I was going to be on All-Stars. Thank God that one girl didn't get to go because I was number 13 on the list and I got bumped up and went anyway. If I was not chosen for something, self-will was going to put me in that spot. I was going to get what I wanted no matter what. And I got a lot of it, you know? I was 14, 15. I started doing plays and musicals. I didn't know how to tap dance, so I went and tried out for this 42nd Street musical. And I had to learn how to tap dance, so they gave me a little minor role. And then I had to take tap dancing lessons to even do it because I didn't know how to tap dance. But somehow I got this part. Never dancing in my life as a tap dancer. I just did that. It was a trait. It was a special uniqueness that I had that I could get what I wanted, you know? It was I had a little bit of charm or something. And I wrote on that a lot. But I was super disturbed. Even in high school, I had obsessions, compulsions about weight, about the way that I looked. Let's be honest, sometimes I still do that, you know, that's where I go sometimes. Everything, just about anything. And always from some kind of negative aspect or like really positive aspect. Like either really self-inflated or really self-deflated, like self-pity and ego, like both sides of the coin. And that's just kind of where I live. Like I have zero humility to just stay in the middle. I did not have it. It was not a quality that I could understand or comprehend, and it definitely wasn't something that I could live. And for no reason of nobody teaching me that way. Like I was taught fairly well. I was raised in Catholic schools in Louisiana. That's how our education system is. You either don't get a good education and you go to public school, or you go to Catholic school. So my parents got married, that was it. I went to Catholic school. So in high school, I go to this Catholic all-girls school, and this is like detrimental at this point because I want to be with the boys. Like, I like boys. That's where I want to be. Like, they're my friends. It ain't about what they want from me. It's just about they accept me for who I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Keep telling yourself that, girl. But I did. Like, that was it. Like, I like boys. I liked being outside of myself. I didn't like being with the girls. I was really just uncomfortable around girls. Like, for whatever reason, I just didn't like them. Like, I just didn't like you. No, I had my little like outsider clique of girls that I would hang out with, and I was really cool with them. I mean, reality is I'm not cool with a lot of them. I mean, I am today, but I went through periods of not being cool with them because I either dated their boyfriends or dated their ex-boyfriends or, you know, whoever. Like, that was just it. I kind of just trampled on people like that. And I went through I don't really want to go into this like trauma aspect of it too much, but I went through a major trauma from like the ages of 10 to 13, and it just shifted my perspective and my view of my self-esteem. And so for a really long time, like this low self-esteem that I had that I couldn't really pinpoint was also like on the flip side of that, this really inflated self-worth. And it was just all I could do to balance it out. It was the only thing I could do to keep sanity because I just couldn't live with some of the stuff that I've been through. And I continued to do things that I then couldn't live with as a result of just holding on to this, internalizing it for a really long time. So, like, I drank and partied in high school. It was no big deal. I used to smuggle little bottles of booze in my laundry basket. I left that all-girls school and went to a boarding school in North Louisiana for gifted kids. I'm a smart kid, so I'm going to go, right? But I got in a C. So, like, I managed to get my dad to, like, get this teacher to change a grade so that I could get into the school. So I go, and I'm just complete trash. Like, I was good for a little bit. I made straight A's the first semester. After that, it was just like all the way downhill. Like, my social life was the most important thing on the planet. That's all I really wanted to do was socialize. I didn't want to study. I didn't want to do homework. I didn't do it. I had a lot of fun partying on the weekends. I drove home a lot. I made 5-hour drives one way by myself every weekend. No big deal. Very independent. Worked on the summer. Worked on the weekends. Because I'm a doer. I'm a human doing, and that's just how it's going to be. Then I was 18, and things just kind of fell apart. I decided I was going to go to this college. I was going to stay in this town and go to college because, like, the guy that I was dating, what's-his-face number, we'll call him number two at this point. What's-his-face number two goes to this college, so that's where I'm going to go. So I go, and like 6 weeks after I get there, he tells me he doesn't know if he wants to be a priest or if he's gay, but like dating me was not going to be it. Update, he's married with 3 kids now. And I went off the deep end. Like, I could not cope with it. I could not wrap my mind around the fact that this guy just didn't want to be with me, and that's all there was to it. And like, I could not get it. Like, I just couldn't get it. I ended up in a psych facility like 3 days later. While I was in psych facility, I met What's-His-Face number 3. And he was there detoxing off of drugs. What's-His-Face number 3, and I actually have 2 kids together. That story gets more fun. But so, like, I come home and I've just fallen out with the parents. And What's-His-Face number 3, you know, Captain Save-A-Hoe, because I'm a victim, I'm probably a hoe at that point, like, swoops in to save me, and he brings me to his house and, like, rescues me. And a couple weeks later, I find out, and I will not use substances by name, but this one I will. He introduced me to methadone, and he flat out said, don't take this. Like, it's going to make you sick if you quit taking it. Like, this is not what you want to do. And I said, I don't care, give it to me anyway. My whole world is, like, crap. So I took it, and he wanted me to stay up and watch a movie, and I was, like, busy throwing up for 16 hours and sleeping. I didn't really know what was going on. And the next day, I woke up, and I took it again. hated every minute of it, but I took it again. Because it was like all the voices that had been going on, like that, you know, like I don't have like the two-sided BS committee up there. Like I get like the four-sided, and one's like manufacturing crap, and like one's, you know, selling it, and one's like printing out Groupon on it, and the other one is just like giving it away for free. And they're just, they go away. They just went away. Just like that. That's all I had to do, and they're gone. They're gone. Everything is gone. And at that point, so am I. It was not but a couple weeks that just in the nature of that crowd, I was out there smoking dope all out in the streets. Like pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization took me about 3 weeks to go from Catholic schoolgirl to crack addicted prostitute. And that was it. That was just my life. That was it. That's where I was going to live. My parents tried dragging me out. That didn't work. Then they tried tough love. That didn't work. You are not going to stop me. Like, I am unstoppable because I'm driven and I can do whatever I want. That's exactly what I did. I ended up in jail. My parents came to see me. They wouldn't get me out. They flat out said, we don't want her. We just want to see her. And that's pretty much how that went down. They ended up letting me out ROR. And my options were go home and freak out because, like, now I'm on this medication and I don't know what it is, but it's going to make me sick. And I know detox is, like, a thing, so maybe I need to go there. So they took me home and they took me to detox the next day. And I went through rapid detox when I was 18. And I guess like 3 or 4 days after it was over, the treatment center brought me to a CA meeting. And that was the first meeting that I ever went to that was any kind of 12-step fellowship. And that was my introduction to CA. And they had all their little savings. Check his pockets. Bottles don't have corners. And like, I don't remember anything else because like I was in detox. But I remember all that stuff. You know, I remember they were just kind of like fun. And they seemed pretty free. And they for sure weren't sitting with a white and a yellow bracelet inside the treatment center. They were sitting outside, and that's not a place that I could be at the time. And I kind of just didn't take it seriously. I really didn't. I didn't think I had a problem. You couldn't tell me I had a problem. Like, if I just get away from these people, like, that'll be fine. And I kind of went through this period of, like, a year of just in and out, this fellowship, that fellowship, doing what everybody told me to do and making sure everything looked really good and wrapped up neat on a piece of paper. But inside, I was just dying, you know, and I knew it. Like, I suddenly started to actually feel, like, guilt, shame, and remorse. Like, when the runs would end, like, I would wake up to those four horsemen. That was it. Like, despair? How did I get here? Bewilderment? How did I get here? Like, everything. Just how did I get here, and why can't I stop? Like, I was just... Girl, you might not be in the right place then. I couldn't understand it. I didn't get it, and I didn't get it for a long time. Somewhere between that and like my next introduction into any kind of recovery, and this book was about a 6.5 year span. In that 6 year span, I had 5 kids, 2 different dads. The second, what's his face number? We'll call him Captain Sabo number 5. I was married to him, and that went down. I'm like, I was pregnant with my 3rd kid. It was a 2nd dad. My parents were like, look, this ain't how we get down. You got to get married. So on a Saturday before LSU game, we went to the Justice of the Peace house, like 8 months pregnant and my little like flats and my feet are swelling out of. Like, hurried up and got hitched with my brother and sister sitting in the car, and then, like, let's go to this buffet and eat before the game comes on. It was super romantic. It was the nicest thing ever. Like, there were, like, 5 people there, 3 of which I hated. I just needed somebody to sign the dang paper. That was it. I got, like, 3 marriage licenses. I let them all lapse. I did not want to marry that man. I held him hostage for a lot of years. I really did. You know, and held my kids hostage. And that's the reality, because like I went from all the way out in the streets to like now I have kids, and you know, what's his face number, whatever, with the 1st kids, like he went way back out there. He left me in the hospital like to go do drugs while I was having our kids. And like I'd lost my 1st kid, got my 1st kid back, had my 2nd kid. You know, I was like trying to do right, but like just not doing right. I just wasn't doing right because I didn't really know what right was. You know, I had guilt for a lot of years about not doing right. But the reality is, like, what else was I going to do? I did the best I could with what I had. and with what I knew. And that was me. That was it. Just me. Do me. As long as I do me, I'm going to be fine because I got this. Because you can't show fear and you can't let the tears fall and pretty girls don't cry and all that crap. Because that's exactly what it is. It's crap. I became completely devoid of human emotion. I was an animal, and anything that was going to satisfy whatever appetite I had that was in my path, I'm going to get it. You know, I'll pick off the weak ones. I'll pick off the strong ones. I like a challenge now. Like, let me get the strong ones. That's where I really feel good. Give me that ego boost. So, you know, we split up and I went home and I thought, everything's going to be fine. You know, I get a job. I'm like a single mom with 5 kids. Like, all the dads are working together. And drugs were an issue. Alcohol never was until it was. And I was out there. Ended up just out there, really out there. What's his face, number 6? He's my baby daddy, number 3. We have 2 kids. So if you've lost count, I have given birth to 7 children. There are 3 different dads, one of which I was married to. So there's that big elephant in the room that, like, for years I couldn't tell people that because I'm like, what do you say? Like, it's a fact. And one thing I've learned is if I just stick to facts, then little bits like manipulation and self-seeking and selfishness and all that stuff doesn't really have a way to creep in there. The only thing that does, however, is self-delusion. Because I can be looking at cold, hard facts and still convince myself that they are not the facts. Somehow they're not the facts. Because that's the nature of my disease. Like, when I do drugs, I do them alcoholically. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm also an addict. I'm a recovered addict. Like, I did drugs at one point, but deep down at the core of me, I have the disease of alcoholism. I am restless, irritable, discontented without some kind of solution. I have a physical allergy, a mental obsession. There's no doubt in my mind. And it wasn't until I came into this recovery that I tried some little bit of R&D, and it didn't go very well. I didn't get drunk, but like controlling it was freaking miserable. It was not fun. Ride fell through, place to stay fell through. I thought I was going to be sleeping in my car behind this bar. And I woke up and I was like 5 miles down the interstate, completely blacked out, got on the road, didn't know it. And at this point now, I'm like single. I've thrown what's-his-face number 824 out, thrown the kids out. It's just me. I'm working. I own my own home. I have my own car. And I'm like driving home like, oh my God. Like, I'm gonna get a DUI. I'm gonna kill somebody. And I'm gonna lose everything. And like suddenly, life seemed a little more worth it. I don't really know why. I don't really have a good answer. I kind of come into the program and I thought the rooms were for people that already were sober. So like I came in and I was like, yeah, I'm like 3 years sober. And like I was like maybe a week. Like, yes, I've worked the steps. I mean, it was like 8 years ago in treatment, but like I'd worked some of them. I went in treatment 8.5 years ago and I walked in and like, I'm like, where's all my books? Like, where's my workbooks and my stuff? And this lady straight up hands me a big book, a yellow legal pad, a yellow highlighter, and a pencil and said, this is all you're going to need for the next 28 days. By the way, you can leave your Lucky Charms and A&W outside. I was like, what? I can't even have my own cereal. What kind of place am I in? But she took me through this book and I had that. So for about that 8 years, 7.5 years, I had that. And that's how I kind of managed to get any kind of semblance of a life. I went on substitution therapy. I spent 4.5 years in a methadone clinic. My counselor was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and was 28 years sober. She never brought me a book, but she constantly guided me back to this book, no matter what. So life got a little better because I wasn't in the streets. I wasn't doing like criminal things, once I quit drinking. But it just wasn't what it could have been, you know? And I don't get the choice of, like, going back and changing that. But there was one key thing missing there that I had for 8 years, this book, but what I didn't have was a fellowship. I didn't have that. I didn't have a fellowship, and I didn't have a God. And so it didn't freaking work. Life got a little bit better. Like, I became more honest. Like, I wasn't stealing things, and I wasn't, like, as much of a cheating human being. And it got better, but it just didn't get to where it could be. You know, I definitely wasn't living up to whatever this purpose and potential that I was always promised that I had inside of me, what that was. Didn't know what that was. So I called a friend in the fellowship the day before, like, my last little run, and I said, look, I am not going to be honest with you. I am not even going to be open, but if you pray for my willingness, I might have a chance of making it back. And drove my car home that night, woke up the next morning, called a friend in the program, and was like, look, I guess this is it. I guess it's time. Like, it's time to get honest. I was sharing a 12-on-12 study that I had started myself. Hi. Completely just disrespecting the fellowship that I was in. So I kind of copped to it. And she said, so you want to go to a meeting tonight? And I was like, yeah, I'm probably going to go to that Monday Night Live meeting. And she goes, cool, I'll pick you up. I was like, I got a car. I don't need you. I'll pick you up. You want me to pick you up or not? So I let her pick me up. And it's probably the only time I've ever surrendered anything in my life was just surrendering my way of doing it. And that was just it. That was it. So I came back in, picked up my little chip. Everybody welcomed me back with open arms. I moved from, like, fellowship to fellowship, from town to town. I've lived all over Louisiana. Like, show up, like, I'm 3 months sober. Like, you're not going to see me desperate. You're not going to see me hopeless. And you people are not going to see me for who I am. It's just not going to happen. I wore character defects like a badge of honor and like a shield. Because as long as I didn't let you know anything, as long as I kept you out, and I use transparency like a weapon, as long as I can tell you that this is the kind of horrible human being that I am, then when I screw you over, you can't say, I didn't warn you. I warned you. Now it's your fault. Because I'm always looking for a fault. Like, somebody's got to be to blame. This whole, like, fact-facing, fact-finding process of inventory blew my mind. Like, I'm just looking for some facts. Like, I'm a math science kid. Like, facts are my jam. That's what I like. That's all I have to do. And it became a little more simple. Somewhere along the way, I had just this breakdown of, like, you know, like so many people, I was raised in a Catholic household. So, like, I'm not believing in that God. That God don't like me. I was either a nun or a dun. I either had no God, or God was done with me, or I was done with God. So there was no me. I couldn't grasp, like, a middle ground. That was just not a thing. Until one day, I just got tired of answering questions after questions and, like, looking for answers, always to end up at, I don't know. Well, I don't know how the moon got in the sky. I don't know. I don't know how she didn't go through treatment, but, like, she's cured of cancer, whatever. I got tired of, I don't know. So I said, okay, fine. And that's where my little bit of God crept in, was I don't know. And for once in my life, I did not have to be right. I did not have to argue. And I didn't have to know. And there was something very relieving in that. There's a lot of peace in that, that I don't have to know. Don't have to know everything. Because then all the weight that I carried on my shoulders of resentment and guilt and shame and remorse and fears, gone. Not my problem anymore. I don't have to deal with it. I stand in the mirror about 24 hours sober, and I just kind of looked at myself and I went, are you thoroughly convinced yet? But, like, you got this thing? And I kind of just said, okay, I guess that's it. I'm convinced. Because although I didn't have to get far back out there, I could look back at the patterns and realize, like, once I start, I don't know when I'm going to stop unless some person, place, thing, or situation stops me. And even if I stay stopped for a little while, I'm going to start back eventually. That's just it. So I go to this meeting. I'm 36 hours sober, and I'm just crying. Like, I'm crying. Y'all, I cried in front of these people. Like, I don't cry. I don't cry. I wear makeup, and makeup runs when you cry. You can't do that. This girl drags me out in the middle of a meeting and pulls me to the curb, and she said, if you don't ask God to remove your self-pity right now, you're going to die. And she was right. So, like, I'm in the toilet paper aisle, like, 11 o'clock that night, like, super miserable in Walgreens. I'm like, okay, dude, like, if you're there, like, can you just, like, take my self-pity or something? Like, can you do that? Are you there? Like, I ain't hearing nothing. I'm like, well, I guess he ain't there. Like, I get my toilet paper. But that night, I bet I wiped my butt like a girl that didn't have self-pity. It was time to put on the bootstraps and not think that I had to forget everything I knew from this book, but just let go of my old ideas. I didn't have to forget everything I knew. I had to forget the stuff that I thought I knew. The stuff that I actually knew, it's facts. Hang on to that stuff. I was ready to throw the whole girl away. How is it? Get rid of the whole girl. Get a new one. Be a new person. That's how I thought this was going to work. I was about 5 or 6 days sober, miserable as all get out, and I pulled out the book and like I pull out the little three columns and I write my three columns and do not look at my part at all. I called my new sponsor who was out of town. She was like, I got a friend you can go drop it on. So I dropped this quote unquote fifth step, which really was just me griping about everybody I didn't like at the time. And I felt so much better. I was like, yes, I'm going to bed in a promise. And I woke up back in a problem. Problem was me. I still wasn't thoroughly convinced that was the problem, though. I kind of knew it, but like I wasn't ready to do anything about it. So I went on these like fourth and fifth step tirades and just got deeper and deeper in the book. Started looking at like how I could actually be helpful to people. Started asking God to just give me some sense of power to like be okay. Because at the end of the day, I still really didn't know if I wanted to be sober or loaded. I woke up every single day for the first month. And I literally had to look at myself in the mirror and go, do you want to be loaded or do you want to be sober? Like, what do you want to do today? But I had a choice. When I went in that treatment center 8.5 years ago, a girl asked me what my drug of choice was. I said, everything except this and this. I never tried those. I don't think I'd like them. And she looked me dead in the face and said, you don't have a choice. She's like, if you'd rather be in treatment or on the beach, where would you rather be? I was like, at the beach, obviously. Cool. You don't have a choice. Like, I missed the memo that, like, I don't get a choice once I put it in. That didn't make sense to me. Couldn't get that for the longest time. All I had to do was just not put it in. And they would tell me, like, keep coming back for 14 years in my revolving door recovery. Keep coming back. Just put the plug in the jug. Don't drink. Don't use between meetings. How? Like, how do I do that? And it's such a freaking secret that it's, like, in the book. And if you just, like, find one of them people that raise their hand, they'll take you right through it. And I had somebody do that for me, you know. And she did other little things like, Heather, don't wear tank tops to meetings. I know it's hot, but you cannot wear those short shorts to meetings. Dress yourself up a little bit. Stop. You can dress up a little bit. It was a messy bun every single day, or like had dreadlocks down to my waist. They were a disaster. I was pretty much a disaster. Just little things like how to be a lady. You know, when somebody tells you something, you ain't got to say nothing. You ain't always got to have an answer or a response. You can just nod and smile and say thank you without saying bless your heart, because down south that does not mean like bless your heart, really. Like, that's pretty much a and that's how that goes. But I had this boyfriend. I was like 5 days sober, so like I got a boyfriend now, right? Because like I like boys, gotta have a boyfriend. Can't have a boyfriend, what am I gonna do? That was the only suggestion I was not taking. Gotta have a boyfriend. Starting these dating this guy, and it's like 7 weeks of a complete like trash fire. Break up like 3 times. But this is the real jacked up part. Like, I'm 5 days sober, but I wouldn't date a guy who is less than a year sober. I don't know why. I'm pretty sure it's like that Captain Save-A-Ho mentality that like if you're more sober than me, like this will be good, right? Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah.
It wasn't good. And one day I called her and I said, I am done. Like, it's time to hang up the hoe heels and hoe hoops and like do something with life. It's like, cause this is not working for me. I was miserable. I was not even happy with like everything that should have been my ideal. I was not happy with. Like, there was a problem with every little thing. Like, I can find the problem in anything cause like I want to fix it. Like, I'm a fixer. Pretty sure they call that like codependent. But I'm a fixer. Like, I want to fix things. And it just didn't work out. And so I called her and I said, look, it's time to, like, rework my sex inventory because I don't even know what I'm doing with my life. And I had a sex ideal. Like, I didn't know that that's not my ideal man. Like, I didn't know that it was an ideal that I was willing to grow towards. So, like, when this guy fit my ideal and it didn't work, I was like, God must be wrong. Like, this is everything my parents ever wanted for me and it's not working. So I cut everything else out. Stuck to the women. Didn't talk to the guys. There were a couple old-timer mentors that I had. They were the only ones that I listened to. Anybody else? Didn't talk to them. If you weren't a female, didn't talk to you. And suddenly all those women that I hated all my life became my absolute rock. they became my foundation. They became the ones that I could call and bare my soul to anybody, and I did not even care what they thought, because what they were thinking was no longer on my mind. I had already made it through steps. I had already gone through some steps. I was a month sober through steps and had my first sponsee in this recovery die. Never even get through the book because she just couldn't stop. It was devastating. I prayed that whole prayer of like, God, you can take anything you want from me. Just help me stay sober. I got sober June 10th of last year. My air conditioner went out in July in Southeast Louisiana, and I got fired a week later.
Ouch.
6 weeks with no air in Southeast Louisiana. But at that point, like, I wasn't scared anymore. I had a little bit of faith, you know, and I had a job, and I had a little bit of money tucked away. And the thing about God also is that, like, my God that I understand, my concept and my perception, where it's at today, like, God will take me back to places that I've already been just to see what I'm going to do and give me the opportunity to do those things again. And he did. He took me back to that crappy job car hopping at Sonic. And you know what? I didn't make near as much money as I did when I was there before. But I showed up every single day with a good attitude. I was incredibly helpful. No matter what my boss needed, I did. And I had healthy boundaries. And when I couldn't come in on an extra day that I was supposed to have off because I wanted to do something with my kids, I didn't go in. Because my ego wasn't telling me, you got to go in or he's going to be mad. Not that serious. Like, I'm not. None of that really had to be that serious. And it never did. But, like, I didn't get that. How was I supposed to know with what I had? So I take the time off from the boys. And I dated myself for a little bit. Redid this sex inventory. And this time, she kept telling me, we're looking for the patterns. Because you don't seem to understand what old ideas are. Cool, maybe you're right. So I did. I started looking for patterns, and eventually I got to the point where it became glaringly apparent that I had consigned my life to, I have these 7 kids, none of them live with me, I will never have them again, I don't even know that I want them or that I ever did, and I would like to have a life partner who I never have to mingle finances with, who never has to meet my kids, and I can just do whatever I want. And that's exactly where I thought I was going to be. That was it. You couldn't have told me anything different. So I do this inventory, and I'm freaking out at the end of it, right? And I call her, I'm freaking out, and she's like, I don't want to hear it. Do your third step prayer and read 4:17. It's like anytime I called her with a catastrophe, I've been having a catastrophe all week about having to be here. Like, standing here was a catastrophe all week, and like, I'm obsessing about it when there's like nothing to obsess about. Everybody kept saying, it's your story, you can't mess it up. But what if I do? Like, well, then you told a lie, and guess what? Got a step for that. Not a big deal. Because I'm fallible, and I'm a human being. Remember, I like to do stuff. But that same lady also taught me I'm not a human doing. I'm a human being. That's what I got to be. I don't have to be an animal, and I don't have to be a doer. I just got to be a human being. That means sometimes I'm really going to screw up. You know, so I did this inventory, and I call her freaking out, and do your third step prayer and read 4:17 through 4:20 and call me back. Click. I call her, I'm like, and she hangs up again. I'm like, she just keeps hanging up on me. I'm like, clearly she doesn't want to hear it. So she calls me back 5 minutes later and says, take out the pen and the paper and just start writing. And I did. I just wrote until I just fell asleep. And I woke up the next morning. I was like, I don't really know how to tell you this, but like, maybe I would like to be happy, and that the only thing I could see in patterns is that I had consigned myself to a life of emotionally detached sex with emotionally intimate guy friends, because that's all I'm worth. I'm not worth anything more than that. And I said, I think that's a lie. And she said, congratulations, you have finally broken through your first bit of self-delusion. And that was just it. It was self-delusion, because I'm not worth it. So, like, all these voices, all these years, it's self-delusion. This self-delusion and this self-seeking, self-pity and fear and all this stuff, it makes me irritated. And I get loaded. And that's why it keeps happening. Because I stay that way. To go to this conference, meet this little guy here. Really like him a lot.
No, not me.
And I had just a moment on this mountain where it was just kind of like there was a crescent moon and a star and the sunset over the horizon, and I just kind of looked at it, and he's actually going to help me set up my tent. And I was like, I think I'm just going to watch the sunset. Like, it's cool if you don't really want to help me. Like, that's fine. I'll figure it out myself because I'm that girl. And I just kind of stood there, and tears just started falling. And it was probably the first time I had been vulnerable in front of another male, genuinely vulnerable in my life. In my life. Because, see, every man I had been with up until that point, I robbed them of my vulnerability. That's a gift. Like, that is a gift. Emotional, informational, physical, all the forms of intimacy, that's a gift. And I held those people hostage, and I robbed them of that. As a result of, I robbed my kids from receiving the gifts that they would have of happy parents. But everything was not my fault. I just had a part. See, I can't take on everything is my fault. Like, that's character defects. I want to sometimes, because, like, then I got the power to fix it. I don't. I came in here and I was told that I had no effective mental defense against the first drink or drug, and that had to come from a higher power. I'm telling you, when I was 6 days sober, headed home from work, and I felt like getting loaded, I don't really know how I didn't. Had a 30-minute drive, and at 15 minutes in, I cut the radio off, and I was like, look, dude, if you're out there again and you can take my self-pity, then can you just keep me sober tonight? And I went home that night, and I went to bed, and I stayed sober. Miserable, but I stayed sober. I did stay sober. That same higher power kept me sober that night, and there's not a doubt in my mind about that. Meet this guy a few months in. I'm off a celibacy vow now, obviously, at this point. But I stayed single. I've been single for 2 years. Stayed single all the way through my celibacy vow, my reworking of my sex inventory, sticking with the women. And it just clicked. I didn't doubt it for a second. It was like I knew. It was kind of like just meeting a person like, oh, hey, you're that person I've been praying for, you know, a little while. Like, oh, hey, like, God let us meet. That's just kind of how I felt. So I went back home, and I stayed in contact. And I made that same guy my higher power for a little bit. I did. That's where I focused all my attention. Work and my new higher power. Because I'm sick and that's what I do. And I went batshit crazy. Sorry for the cursing. I got really restless, irritable, discontent. I wasn't really working with anybody. I have character defects that allow me to show up for service commitments. No matter what. Like, dress. I'll have on the right clothes, I'll have on the right makeup, the right shoes, and I will say all the right things because my character defects will not allow me not to do it. But I have done that for long periods of time in these rooms and been dying inside, and nobody knew it. Nobody knew it. So I went to these women and I said, look, like, I'm gonna have to go in a psych facility. Like, I'm not okay. I was completely manic. I'd been staying up for days and days and days on end. And they said, cool, come over and read the book. I was like, you are not hearing me, because I got to a point where I was just so not okay that I couldn't effectively work a program, and that was a problem. That was the only problem that I had, and I walked into the hospital, and those same women took me to the hospital, and I admitted myself for psychiatric care, and I stayed there for 5 days. I came out much better on the other side of it. By about day four, I said, look, thanks for treating bipolar, but you're dealing with untreated alcoholism if you don't get me out of here. My fellowship brought me a big book, 2 grapevines, a 12 and 12, and a daily reflection. And so I just held meetings in there because I was on a low-level unit that also had people detoxing. So we had meetings in there as the best we could do. And it helped a lot. Probably got me out of there a lot quicker because I was about to go crazy in there in the nut house. And I got out, and I made my trip up here. I came, never really flown on a plane. I've flown on a plane and never been by myself. Got on the plane by myself, packed my stuff. Like, I had somebody drive me to the airport, had somebody pick me up from the airport. Like, I was okay, you know? I just was able to just show up to life, and I don't know when it happened. But, like, somewhere, I was convinced for the longest time that, like, banks were going to steal my money, and it was because self-reliance had failed me. Like, I had written a lot of bad checks. Like, let's be real. It talks about fears in the book. It's because self-reliance failed me. I wrote bad checks on closed accounts because I was an active addiction. Money, they wouldn't let me use my debit card because there was no money in the account. So for 10 years, I didn't have a bank account. Well, like, I got a checking account, and then I got a savings account, and I made sure I paid my car insurance and had a little bit of money put away. For the longest time, like my mom used to say, there's bill money, there's save money, and there's blow money. And all I heard was blow money. I had no money. I was pretty much screwed all the time. It wasn't the case. I made a trip. I came up here, and the fellowship was ridiculous. It ignited something in my soul that I just went, I need that. I need that. Because I was still kind of dying back home. I was really dying. There was absolutely nobody to work with. When there'd be a room full of guys and I'd be the only female and they would ask if anybody was willing to sponsor, I'd raise my hand and everybody would be like, there's only guys here. I'm like, if nothing ensures immunity against the first drink, such as, you know, tense work with other alcoholics, like it's going to have to be a guy because I'm not willing to die because you only want me to work with a female. Sorry, not going to do it. Not going to do it. I didn't buck the system for once. I didn't take every suggestion, but I was also told when I came in here that everything was a suggestion. Didn't have to take it all at once. And I didn't. I didn't take it all at once. Some of it took a little bit of pain. Some of it has taken a lot of pain. But I've taken most of them. Because at the end of the day, like, I know no one in here is going to tell me something that doesn't come from a place of love. There's ever a place that I could ever come to do some self-care and to raise my self-esteem and to stay alive just long enough to think that my life might be worth saving and living. These rooms are the place. That was it. Not my mama, not my daddy, not my brother, not my sister. None of those people. It was here. It was in the fellowship. I got sober and Alcoholics Anonymous back home. That's really all that we have. There's a lot of like much older people and much younger people. And so, like, I felt that, like, terminal uniqueness coming in because, like, I'm in my 30s and I've got 7 kids and 3 children's fathers. Like, I felt like I stuck out like a sore thumb. Didn't really. Everybody loved me. And it's not that way anymore. But something was just different here. I just really liked it. I liked the people. So he did. He came home and I was like, I need to talk to you. I think I'm going to stay. And my plan was, I'm going to find somebody to live with. I'll find a girl to crash with, or like I'll get my own house. I'm not living with this boy. Like, I am not doing that. Like, it was fun to visit and I really, like, I love you, but like, I'm not living with a boy. It's not going to happen. 4.5 days later, put those 2 baskets, the TV and the mirror and the roughly $200 I had in my name. And I came up here and moved in with the boy. And I was supposed to be working snow removal, but no snow was falling. And, like, I'm freaking out in fear. So, like, I get this other restaurant job. And then I don't know what's up with y'all's winter, but, it's like, this shit just falls out of the sky and it doesn't stop. It just did not stop. I swear, did not stop. It didn't stop at all. It didn't. You know, and then it became, you know, 120 hours a week. And I share my story a couple of times up here. I have sponsees up here. I still have a sponsee back home that I've had since before my research and development trip. She would not drop me. And I kept telling my sponsor back home, I was like, look, I cannot sponsor this girl. Like, I just came back from a quote-unquote relapse. Let me be clear. I have never relapsed. In my 14 years of revolving door recovery, I have never fully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body until now. I have never relapsed. I can't say I've ever relapsed. I used to, because I'd come in and go. I'd come in, I'd go. Because I knew when I came in, you'd welcome me with open arms. It was a great landing pad. It's a great place to go. The only problem is, BS only holds up for so long in 12-step groups because everybody else done did it. Mm-hmm. I have never relapsed. I can't say that's part of my story yet. I am absolutely eligible. And for a second, I was terrified that I was going to relapse. I was convinced of that. You couldn't have told me otherwise. And I will stand here today and say, it's still a possibility. It talks about it in the foreword of the number of people that do recover, the number of people that recover after a certain period of time of trying it. And some people just don't get it. And maybe I'm one of those. Today, I'm not and I don't have to be. Today, I get to have a choice. I get to have a choice. Contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. That's it. I couldn't understand this just for today, this one day at a time thing. I am future tripping. I am past blasting. If I can't go back and fix it, or I can't go to the future and manipulate how it's going to go, I don't want to do it. You can't make me. I don't do what I don't want to do. But such is life. You either show up or you don't. You know? I get the privilege of showing up daily. I've gone through periods where I work too much, or this became a higher power, or that became a higher power. Every single time. See, this is the thing about being in recovery and like having each other's backs. Is like, if I am facing you, right? If I have your back, that means I'm facing you. I will face you face to face. And the thing I have that you don't is I have the ability to see the hits you don't see coming. People have given me that here. They've seen the hits I did not see coming. And it has saved my life on more than one occasion. By the same token, I've been in that other spot. You know, I have been in the position where, you know, like how people recover and like, you don't know it yourself. Like, I didn't know I was getting any better. Like, I knew things weren't as hard, but I didn't know they were getting better. But the same thing is like kind of getting sick, you know? Other people see it before you do. Why aren't you around? What are you doing? Why are you so grumpy? Why are you treating me that way? The shoe has been on the other foot, you know? I've been on both sides of the equation. And it's not fun. But when I have those moments of like, I kind of just got to be tough for a second, it's okay. It's okay. Because I don't necessarily have to be right. I can say, look, you're not doing so hot. Because somebody did it for me. Multiple people have done it for me. And if they hadn't, I might not be here today. You know? It's like this process of like going through the steps. Like, you know, I get to recover like physically first just by separating and like getting away from the substance. I get some sense of sanity. I thought insanity was doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. That's not what the book says. The book says insanity, or the lack of sanity, is the lack of proportionate inability to think straight, or the ability to think straight. I see parts, but I don't see the whole. Like, I think it's the caboose going to kill me, not the engine. I don't get that concept. I also don't get the concept of I'm walking into a fire expecting to get rain, you know, stuff like that. Like, that's that insanity. You know, I get to this point of, like, hope. I came in and got sober on January 1st, 24 hours a day meditation, and it says something to the effect of, do I have a soul sickness? Am I a desperate person? That is absolutely where I was. I was desperate, absolutely hopeless, because as though my bottom got higher. Remember, I started at the bottom. I started all the way in pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I'm not there anymore. So I must not be an alcoholic, must not be an addict, except that I am. Because as I went through those 14 years, my self-delusion just got that much greater. My ability to change the mask and to wear whatever mask it was got better. That was unmanageability. That was unmanageable. I can't do that. You know, I get through some of these steps and like I recover mentally. So like this mental obsession is like gone now. I still have the fleeting thought of like, what about if, you know, or if I'm real pissed off, I might think, well, I could just go do this. And then it's immediately followed with the thought of like, is that really what you want to do? You know, it's like God's like this girl best friend sometimes. It's like, is that really what you want to do, girl? I don't think so. It's not. I get to recover physically. I get to recover mentally. Through some practice of 10, I get to recover emotionally, you know? I get to have some emotional sobriety. Like, being sober is not just enough anymore. It's not. Like, I need to be emotionally well. Like, if take away my drinking drugs, take away my program, you're still gonna get a girl in the psych ward. Every time. Outright mental defective, maladjusted to life. That's where I go. I don't know how to live. Like, I didn't have this thinking problem or this feeling problem. You know, I thought I was going to come in and, like, you know, get some new light on triggers and coping mechanisms. And that's what I thought. 14 years of psychiatry and treatment centers. That's what I thought I was going to get. And instead, I got this same blue book. and a fellowship. I got a fellowship, you know, and over some period of time of, you know, it, in the 11th step, like as it's written and how it works is like sought through prayer and meditation, like everything's in this past tense, but that's seek. It's just seek. I ain't got to find it. I ain't got to find God. If I think I found God, I'm probably in trouble. Probably in trouble because everything that I thought I was going to get from like some God or higher power, not at all where my life is today. It's not. I would have sold myself and everybody around me short because like everybody else around me has slowly finally started to recover. Once I quit putting my self-will in their life and implementing what I thought needed to happen, they knew how to live life. Like, who knew? Who knew that they could live their lives? Like, I thought I had to live it for them. I thought I needed to tell them how to do it. You know? So, like, I get to physically recover. I get to mentally recover. I get to emotionally recover. And I get to overcome that spiritual malady. And I get to give it away. You know? Like, and no one sponsee is the same. No service work is ever the same. Like, I've had sponsees go through the steps in the last couple months that, like, the light comes on in their eyes before the color comes back in their skin because they just did it. They just did the work, you know? And for whatever reason, that's the way it lined up. Some of the others, not so much. Everybody's kind of at their own pace. And it has been my responsibility to just meet them where they're at because that's what somebody else did for me, you know? I don't care what your social miscues are or why it is that you behave the way that you do. We'll get there. We'll figure it out. Maybe we don't. And it's just who you are. And that's cool, too, because we get acceptance. You know? That's it. Like, these periods of reflection in the first couple of steps and, like, this period of acceptance. Accepting that I'm going to turn my life over. Because remember, I was sitting on the curb and that girl told me if I didn't ask God to remove my self-pity, I was going to die. So I did. And somewhere in there, it was also like, I'll do whatever you want. I don't care anymore. It's not even about just being sober. Like, here's my life, and you can do whatever you want, God. I'll do whatever it is you want. And that's what that seek is about. You know, it talks in the 12 and 12 about self-examination, meditation, and prayer, and it breaks it down in the big book in a little bit longer form in the same way. But the thing about like emotional sobriety and spiritual sobriety is if I'm not looking at the emotional sobriety standpoint of it, my spiritual sobriety starts to suffer greatly. Because if me and God aren't disagreeing, it's not the God for me. Because if I agree with God all the time, there is something very, very wrong. I'm sitting in self-delusion. That's a fact. I'm not always going to agree with God's will. I did not want to leave Louisiana. Did not want to do it. Went home and everybody told me I was crazy. They might be right. But I'm here. You know? I got to make a choice. I got to live through some courage and let go of some fear, and I made it. And that's just where I'm at now. By the same token, that same way that we see people get better or worse in front of our eyes and only we see it, the same thing works for the steps. I can work them in order as the book lays them out. I can go down just as quickly. I won't know that I've spiritually relapsed. That's not gonna happen for me. I won't know it. Sometimes I feel that like, I don't feel God. Well, guess what? I ain't gotta feel God. It's about showing up and doing his work regardless of how I feel.
Say that.
Because that's the promise that I made. That's the first commitment that I made to myself and to a higher power. And I've failed a lot of people since then. I have not failed to at least turn back to my God and not right my wrongs. Had amends pop up along the way that I did not expect to make. Best friend I hadn't talked to in years because I was one of them crazy ladies on Sanctimommies for a couple of years. And like I ripped her apart, like my best friend of 12 years on a public forum. And one day she sent me a friend request. And I just sent her this message and I was like, look, I really was just out there. And that's not okay. Her response was, I was struggling with my own stuff. You're struggling with your stuff. Let's bygones be bygones. And let's be friends again. Just like that, I have my best friend back. If I had not made the amends when it presented itself, I might not have that person in my life. That might not be a relationship that I have these days. I don't get to choose when it comes. I don't get to choose how it comes. The only thing I get to choose every single day is whether or not I show up and do the work. Not because I think I want to or because I feel like it, but because it's the right thing to do. Because I don't know how to live. I don't have a drinking problem. I don't have a drug problem. I have a me problem. I have a living problem. I don't know how to do that. I couldn't understand this self-will thing. What do you mean? So if I'm not going to be self-centered, what do I put there? Ding, ding, ding. God. It's just that simple. All I had to do was take me out of the middle for long enough to let God in. That God that I found, and I don't know. I like not knowing. That's a comfortable place for me. Knowing was where I used to be. That's where I like to be. I like not knowing. I like not knowing how things are going to go. For one, life is just far more exciting. I don't know what I'm getting into. I don't know. So I don't get bored anymore. I used to say I'm bored all the time. No, you're restless, irritable, and discontented. I'm not bored. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm sitting in my ism because I like to sit in my stuff. I like to squander hours that might be worthwhile. That's my nature. And I faulted myself for it for years until I accepted it. And that just meant to live in it. I couldn't understand character defects. How do I let them go? Like, God's supposed to take them by now. That's not how this happens. I mean, if it happened for you, I'm really happy for you, but that is not how it happened for me. You know, that's not been the case. I have to let go of things. If I'm continuing to sit and talk about the same old resentments and inventory the same things over and over and over, then I'm not sitting in forgiveness or acceptance, whichever one my higher power is requiring of me. I am now resisting. And I like resistance. Resistance used to be the thing that I like to thrive on. Resistance is the little bitty droplets of, here you go, from my higher power these days to tell me, something's not right. Why don't you just sit for a minute? Because I ain't got to do everything right now either. I ain't got to talk about it right now. I don't want to. Give me 5 minutes. Because if you don't give me 5 minutes, I'm going to be throwing stuff. There's going to be a broken window. Your nose is going to be broken and somebody's going to be in the hospital. Because I get angry. See, I don't have that anger problem anymore. The thing about depression and being in a psych ward is like, they told me, you've lost the ability to cope. And that's why you're here. Well, she was right. I didn't know how to cope with life. Depression is that like anger turned inwards. And I couldn't be angry with other people anymore because it kept getting me in criminal trouble. So I just got angry at myself. And for what? If I'm going to bed every single day knowing that I've done the best I could with what I had, what's the problem? Like, I couldn't take compliments. Like, that was uncomfortable. Like, either you have a motive or you're lying and I don't trust you. Well, no, I'm crapping all over my higher power is what it is. Because if someone's giving me a genuine compliment of this, that, or the other, whether it be work ethic or how I show up as a friend or the way that I act as a sponsor or a sponsee, I have single-handedly crapped all over my higher power because that's a gift that I was given. That is a blessing in my life. It's better to just say thank you and move right along. Because no matter how comfortable or uncomfortable I am, it doesn't have to be the sum total of parts of what I do. That wasn't something I had a grasp for. I'm either thinking or feeling or thinking or feeling, and that is driving my actions. Driven. I am driven by all that crap. That drive, somewhere along the way, got to transform into a motivation. Just a motivation to live a better life for a higher power that I didn't believe in to start with, that I was just talking to air, that somehow stepped in and saved my life. I now have a responsibility. Like, I get freedom as a result of working the steps. But I now have a responsibility. Every freedom comes a responsibility. It's my responsibility to show up. I had the absolute pleasure of going to, I don't want to call the house out by name, but I got to do H&I last week at one of the houses, and it was just the coolest thing. Like, it's just really cool. Like, I love seeing, like, me from a few months ago, like, in another person. And I'm just like, oh, sweetheart, just wait. Like, it can get better, but it could get so much worse. Like, you just don't know, you know? And it's just a little bit ironic. Like, I don't, you know, I've kind of been freaking out all week. It's like, I don't deserve to be here. The thing is, I don't get to choose what I deserve. Undeserved. Unmerited. But that's grace. that's God's grace. And I don't get to choose when or how it comes. And I can live with that. I can live with not knowing. I can live with God's grace. God's grace has given me some amazing things. You know, I have constant contact with my kids. I have the three that live in Oklahoma, the middle, the ex-husband, like, it's been 6 years since I've seen them. And it is not my place to step into those children's lives and be like, hey, mom's here. It's not my place. I don't get to do that because they live a happy, stable life. It is not my place to step in and shake their lives up all over again. The second I moved into acceptance over that, I became much happier, much more at ease, much more at peace, because that's just the way that it worked out. And I have my own part there, and I get to own my part by letting them be. Just letting them be little human beings, letting them have stability that I couldn't give them. My oldest daughter turned 13 yesterday. That's trouble. That's a whole lot of trouble. I see like me all in her, you know? And I have 3 and 4 year old, 13 and 12, 3 and 4. 3 and 4 year old dad don't get along so much. Really tries hard not to let me see the kids. You know, so the other day I said, look, I'm finally in a position, because that same girl that drove up here in a 1999 Toyota RAV4 with nothing but $10 in cash, $31 in change, signed my lease next month for the 2-bedroom apartment, and the roommate that we currently have is moving out. Now I have my car. My car insurance is paid. Have a place to live. I have 3 jobs. Like, I landscaped this week, but I'm going to be doing snow removal this weekend because that's Wisconsin. And that restaurant job that I was gifted right before snow started falling, I'm still there. Not only am I able to be employed, I am able to work with multiple employers about what's best for not only me, but for them. How can I be useful to you? How can you be useful to me? And that's a blessing. Good employers are really hard to come by. I have 3 that managed to work with me. And as a result of, like, today I got extra money on my paycheck from my landscaping, and then I got my paycheck this morning from the snow from 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, it's like twice, almost 3 times as much as what it's supposed to be. So, like, send this lady this message. She was like, well, it's a long story, but we chose a few employees to receive this money as part of some benefit for a post office, so enjoy. I'm not that girl. I don't get chosen for stuff like that. I make stuff like that happen, right? No. I don't know how it happens. I don't know how it happens. Sometimes I don't know where the time goes. I don't know where the time's going to come from. The numbers don't add up. The money doesn't add up. I don't know. But the cool thing about that, I ain't gotta. And if I think I gotta know, chances are, somewhere along the way of practicing the principles in all my affairs and carrying the message, I have, like, slept on my program. And I'm in a whole spiritual relapse. The next thing about that is, like, that emotional sobriety leads into that spiritual sobriety. That's next. Eventually, I'll stop doing that daily inventory. I'll go through periods where I'll get a little bit lax and rest on my laurels. Emotional sobriety, blown. I'm a hot mess. I'm an absolute terror to be around. Yourself. I'm an absolute terror to be around. And then I don't want to be around anybody. That being said, before that, though, I mentally recovered. And I've gone through periods of absolute mental obsession and sobriety. The thing about that, that means somewhere along the way of doing 4 through 9, which is my 10, is doing 4 through 9. That's it. Just keep doing it all over again. One big idea. Keep on doing it. You don't graduate. What? I got to be top of this class. I got to have the best program. For me and for God. If I'm mentally obsessing, I have now spiritually relapsed. I then emotionally relapse. Mental obsessions come and go. I will start getting obsessed about everything, my weight, my hair, like, what am I doing? I'm working too much. I'm not working enough because I'm just sitting here. I'm obsessed about the way the bed's not made, but I'm not making the bed. Absolutely useless. And I go from a promise to a problem. If I've gone from a physical to a mental to an emotional to a spiritual recovery, and I have backtracked my way through a spiritual relapse, an emotional relapse, and a mental relapse, there ain't but one place for me to go next. I'm gonna get loaded. I don't want to get loaded. It's not what I want to do anymore. Because sometimes I still got to wake up and just go, do I want to be loaded or do I want to be sober? That's it. If I just make that one choice, I might can be all right. Somehow, by the grace of God, this fellowship, good sponsorship, and a whole lot of love from people, I have managed to be sober. Not stay sober, managed to be sober. Because I'm not a human doing. I'm a human being. All I got to do is be. I managed to be sober since June 10th of last year. So with that, I have an extreme amount of gratitude for you guys. Thank you.